Every day, Bill Frank...
We're going to be doing one thing, and one thing only.
...talks with the best guests in America about business.
You mean business?
Monkey business?
Are you ready to get down to business?
All right! Everybody's here, and that means we can get down to business.
Entertainment.
Entertainment.
The entertainment capital of the world.
What kind of entertainment?
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Sports.
Game on.
A grueling test of strength, speed, and stamina.
Wow, just like in the pros.
And the local community.
The rage in local radio.
Find out what's going on locally.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time now for the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. Now, here's your host.
Bill Frank.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. You can also hear me streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work in Ventura and Santa Barbara. The Bill Frank Radio Show is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will discuss one of these two topics. My next guest is a staunch defender of the Electoral College in presidential elections. During this election year, we'll examine the continuing need for the Electoral College from her book, Enlightened Democracy. Tara Ross is the author of two books, Enlightened Democracy, and is the co-author of Under God, George Washington, and the Question of Church and State. Tara is both a lawyer and a writer. She focuses on the intersection of law, public policy, and constitutional history. Her work has been published in several law reviews and newspapers, including the National Law Journal, USA Today, the American Enterprise Online, National Review Online, Weekly Standard, FoxNews.com, Human Events, The Washington Times, and the Texas Review of Law and Politics. Tara is a retired lawyer and former editor-in-chief of the Texas Review of Law and Politics. She obtained her BA from Rice University and her JD from the University of Texas Law School. Tara and her husband and their two children reside in Dallas. Joining us from Dallas, hi, Tara, how are you today?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and thank you for being a subject matter expert in this particularly arcane subject of the Electoral College. So let's just cut right to it. Those of us who are around remember the 2000 election, Bush versus Gore, and how that had to be decided not only by the Electoral College, but also by the courts as well. So the question then, as it is today, comes to mind, why should we keep the Electoral College? I mean, Tara, historically, this was created by a bunch of white, rich landowners. Women couldn't even vote back then. In the digital age, where everybody could conceivably vote via the internet, why shouldn't we just revert to a popular vote system?
Well, of course, by that logic, we'd have to ditch the whole thing and start over, right? Not just the Electoral College, but the whole Constitution. Look, the founders were students of history, and they put a lot of time and thought into the creation of the Constitution that they created, including its presidential election process, which was a topic that came up early and often in the Constitutional Convention. And we should keep the Electoral College that they created because they were trying to create something that would accommodate many states, a country full of many states of different sizes, different regions, different industries, different interests. And they knew that this was going to be important. How do you elect a man or woman who can represent the whole country, who is a good representative for such a diverse group of people? I would argue, if anything, we need the Electoral College worse today than we did then. You know, they thought their country of 13 states was so big and diverse that they needed something like this. Today, of course, we have 50 states. We are, if anything, bigger and more diverse and more in need of a unique presidential election process that will help us to get the best possible representative.
Well, historically, it is a wonderful system, and kudos to the founding fathers for their foresight in doing this. But is the Electoral College just too arcane for ordinary voters today?
No, absolutely not. It's not old. It's not outdated.
No, it's not old. It's not outdated. It is still in vogue today. Well, then the question becomes, the founding fathers were thinking about 13 colonies, then became states. Do all states today benefit equally from the Electoral College?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all Americans. We all live in this country together. We all need a system that's going to create a healthy political dynamic in our country, and we all benefit from that. Now, you will hear people gripe about the Electoral College, maybe because they feel like at one particular moment in time, their vote did not feel as good, You know, if you're a Democrat voting in Texas this year, maybe you're going to gripe about that a little bit. But look, at the end of the day, the founders were not trying to create a system that gave you warm and fuzzy feelings. They were trying to create a system that would create a healthy political atmosphere. And that benefits everybody all the time. So, yes, I mean, absolutely, the Electoral College is a great system because it has done so much to make sure that in our presidential election process, we must come together, we must work together, we must compromise, we must focus on our similarities, not on our differences. The candidate who wins is the person who has done the best job of that.
All right, my guest is Tara Ross, author of the book Enlightened Democracy, The Case for the Electoral College. And Tara, I just want to challenge you a little bit, because small states like, say, Delaware, contend that a winner-take-all system in the larger states like New York and California put them at a distinct disadvantage. True or false?
That's false. Look, I think, you know, the way to look at it is people who are against the Electoral College, like, they gripe about what they have, and they don't take the time to look to see what the alternative would be. You know, maybe Delaware feels like, okay, we're so much smaller than everybody else. New York has, you know, 20-some-odd, however many electoral votes they have. It's not fair. But what they forget to look at is, look, if you get rid of the Electoral College, you're going to go to a situation where, and I think Delaware has 3 electoral votes. Instead of, like, 3 electoral votes to 20-some-odd electoral votes, the difference is going to be a much bigger gap in population. I'll tell you, the numbers I do know are for Wyoming and California, the biggest state, of course, with the most people, California, versus Wyoming, the smallest state with the least number of people. Wyoming has 3 electors, and they have about 500,000 people, as opposed to California, which has, I think it's like 37, 38 million people compared to 55 electoral votes. The numbers will be exactly precise in my book. This is my best recollection. The number of electors in California is, they have like 16 or 17 times the number of electors. But if you go to the popular vote, it's more like 68 times the number of people. You know, does California have more of an influence in a presidential election? Yes, but it's not nearly as bad as it would be without the Electoral College in place.
All right, my guest is Tara Ross. So let's continue on with this idea of fairness, Tara, because that's going to be a big theme in this presidential election. Critics claim that the current system really excludes everybody outside of those battleground states from the political debate. Now, this year, the battleground states are Virginia, North Carolina, Nevada, Ohio, Florida, Colorado, New Hampshire, and Wisconsin. How true is that? Because we focus, the media focuses a lot on these swing states, these battleground states, call them what you will, and the rest of the states get marginalized. California, for example, is considered to be in the Democratic pocket, and there's really very little that a Republican voter can do to sway that one way or the other. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I would note 2 things. One is swing states change all the time. I mean, of the list that you said, there's several that are new this year, right? I mean, Virginia, North Carolina, New Hampshire, these were not swing states before. They're swing states now. They used to be safe states. So one is, I'd say, even to the extent that it's true, you know, this is a constantly fluctuating thing, and no state is in permanently a safe or a swing state. But the other thing I would note is that the campaign is not all about the TV commercials in the final couple weeks of the election. The presidential election is about an awful lot more than that. It's about 4 years worth of governance, you know, and it's about the fact that some states are safe because they feel pretty good about that. You know, some states feel pretty good about what Democrats have been doing. Maybe some states feel a lot better about what Republicans have been trying to do by contrast. So, you know, Obama passes his Obamacare legislation, and there are some people that love that, and that's why they are so safe. That's why those states are safe. So, you know, I dispute that some states are just being ignored because they don't have television commercials in the last few weeks of the campaign. I think those states are just already pretty satisfied, and that's why they are safe states.
All right, my guest is Tara Ross. But Tara, let me just carry on one more step with this if I can. Regardless of these swing states, they fluctuate, and I'll give you that. They may change from election to election, from year to year. However, it begs the bigger question. If there are only 10 or so real swing states, that means that approximately 2/3 of the state during the campaign and during the governing really get ignored.
Why would they get ignored?
Well, because they don't count. I mean, as you get closer to an election, where do you think the pork marrow money is being spent right now to woo voters? It's being spent in Ohio. It's being spent in Florida. It's being spent on projects in Virginia. And here in California, we're not seeing any of that money from the president right now because it's an election year. He's focusing on the swing states. As he governs, clearly he's going to govern fairly over all 50 states in the case of an emergency. But where he spends his time, that is also important. And he spent precious little time in the majority of the United States during his first 4 years.
Look, without California's 55 electoral votes, Obama is up a creek. I promise you he is not ignoring California. Now, I do think he is spreading out his attention. You know, maybe he is giving California only enough attention to keep the 55 votes. But we don't want a president that is too focused on one state or one part of the country. Now, if he ever goes too far away from that and is not giving California enough attention, I promise California will let him know. And they will let him know. They may not let him know by voting Republican, but they might let him know by voting for a third party in such large numbers that their state is no longer safe. So there is no... I really dispute that any state is ignored. I think that when states are safe because they are getting enough attention on the things that are important to them, whether it be through governance, you know, or because they like the visits or whatever it is. But when they stop feeling that way, they let parties know really fast. You know, West Virginia is a really good example, and a good recent example in this regard. They used to be an extremely safe blue state. They got really tired of the environmental policies of the Democratic Party. And so a state that used to be very safe, you know, got taken for granted. And they flipped. They've been voting Republican for several elections in a row now. So I just, you know, I think we do have to keep in mind that whether a state, you know, every state is important because every state is casting their electors. They're casting their electoral votes. And every state, you know, presidential candidates need those states to win. And if they ever start to feel ignored, as a matter of history, they let the political parties know pretty darn fast.
All right. My guest is Tara Ross, author of the book Enlightened Democracy. And, of course, we're talking about the Electoral College. So, Tara, can a candidate win the popular vote and still lose the election?
Of course. That's what happened in 2000. Al Gore won the popular vote, and George Bush won the electoral vote, and George Bush was elected to the presidency. The last time it happened before that was in 1888. Grover Cleveland lost the electoral vote, even though he won the popular vote, and Benjamin Harrison, the winner of the electoral vote, was the one who became the president. Now, I would argue in 1888 that was a good result. Grover Cleveland spent too much time focused on the southern portion of the country. He racked up really large margins of victories in a handful of southern states. Benjamin Harrison did a much better job of building a national coalition of support for himself that spanned a much broader portion of the country. And I would say that Harrison, that the Electoral College chose a better representative for the country, someone who better understood a wider diversity of American people.
All right, that's an interesting point. The other two candidates that lost the popular vote yet won the electoral vote, John Quincy Adams in 1824, Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876.
So I dispute those, actually.
You do? Why so?
1824, there was not a popular vote in all of the states. So you're correct that the recorded popular vote reflected that. But there were lots of state legislatures that directly selected their own electors at that time without any reference to a popular vote within the state. And those happened to be Quincy Adams states, by and large. In 1876, you're right that there was a discrepancy between the popular vote and the electoral vote. But that was in the aftermath of Civil War and Reconstruction, and there was just a whole slew of stuff going on that year. And I also think it's not the best. It's just not the best example.
All right, but my point was, I was coming to the point that those were all in the 19th century. We went the whole 20th century without a discrepancy, and then the very first election of the 21st century, we had one of these discrepancies again.
Right.
You know, why was there a 100-year gap between the last occurrence with Harrison and George W. Bush? Is there any particular reason for that?
Well, maybe in part because candidates started to understand what they needed to do if they wanted to win the Electoral College. I think with any game, when you have a certain goal and you know, a certain thing you need to achieve, you strategize accordingly. And so I think candidates maybe have just gotten better at that. I think also the two-party system probably solidified a bit during that time period. It was a little bit rocky during some of the 1800s.
All right. My guest is Tara Ross, author of the book Enlightened Democracy, The Case for the Electoral College. So, Tara, I've got to ask you the question. Clearly, you're an expert on this. How did you become an expert on the Electoral College? And in particular, connect the dots for us between your broken arm and your interest in the Electoral College.
Oh, you heard about the broken arm, huh? Yeah, it was completely by accident. I did not set out to do this. I had nothing in my brain about doing it, but I did break my arm when I was in law school, and it was my writing arm, and I needed easy credits that did not require me to take notes in class. And so an independent study on the Electoral College was one of the things that I did. And that paper eventually turned into a law review article, which was I was going to get it published, and then I ended up writing a book instead. But it's just been this kind of progression through the years, and I've really convinced myself, without ever meaning to, but just through research and looking into it, that the Electoral College is so underappreciated. Nobody really understands it, and the sound bites against it tend to be very easy and, you know, very short and swift, and they sound great. And it takes a little bit more time to explain the Electoral College, and I think that's unfortunate. But I really think without it, our country would be a lot different today. And people don't really realize it until they take time to look into it.
Well, you certainly do explain it well in your book, Enlightened Democracy, The Case for the Electoral College. Tara, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Enlightened Democracy?
I tried to make it a really easy read because the Electoral College is a subject that scares a lot of people. And it sounds complicated and complex and like I'm not going to possibly be able to understand it. I just wanted it to be an easy-to-read presentation that would hopefully be interesting, lots of stories about past elections and that sort of thing. But also, I just want people to come away understanding why the Founding Fathers did what they did. Now, I think at the end of the day, we're not going to all agree about this, but I would rather we all be informed and all know the history and all know what's going on and then have a discussion about where to go rather than having so many people who, because it's not taught in schools and because they have not had the opportunity, just don't know. And so they just hear the easy sound bites against the Electoral College and think they know the whole thing.
My guest has been Tara Ross. Tara, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
My website is taraross.com, T-A-R-A-R-O-S-S. And the book, the second edition of the book, can be found at enlightenddemocracy.com.
That is great. Tara, thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.